shoulder. You gotta get back. Dirt on your shoulder. Your homie holding position. Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4, The Blitz. Mitch Whitmire here with you on AM 1450 KATE. It's been a couple of weeks, I think, since we've had him on. The baseball season died down for a little bit after the Fall Classic concluded, but winter meetings taking place this week. Off-season moves being made left and right by all the clubs in Major League Baseball, or most of them. So we've got Brandon Warren hopping on and taking time out of his afternoon. We're always appreciative for his time and presence. Find his work through The Athletic. You can go to theathletic.com/MN. Make sure to sign up and subscribe. We'll get to the Twins in a minute, Brandon, but like I said, we haven't talked in a couple of weeks, and I think most would objectively agree so far the offseason, the biggest news was Giancarlo Stanton being traded from Miami to the Yankees. So I thought we would start there, and things become drastically more interesting with him in the Big Apple, most would say. Even if you can't stand the Yankees, it makes the game more interesting. One angle, though, that isn't being discussed much, Brandon, is there's a fan base in Miami that got a brand new ballpark, largely funded by taxpayers, that were promised for better times ahead by the previous regime and ownership, and now that franchise is having a complete fire sale, right?
Yeah, and you got to wonder if Derek Jeter is the secret agent for the Yankees by making this trade. And there's some risk, don't get me wrong. He's owed something like $200-plus million over the next 10 years if he opts back into his contract after 3 years from now. And that's part of why the return was so light for him, because the upside and downside, you have to weigh the risk, of course. But, yeah, it's not going to be a good time to be a Miami Marlins fan, if it ever has been. I know they've won a couple World Series and have completely torn things down immediately thereafter. Now they're just tearing things down with nothing much to show but a few 70-win seasons. They've thrown some money at fixes, you know, Wee-Yin Chen and Edinson Volquez for their rotation. And, you know, they had a really good offense last year, basically above-average production across the board. But they just couldn't get anything pitching-wise. And I think, you know, the uncomfortable elephant in the room is that the death of Jose Fernandez has really set that franchise back. And, you know, they've been a stumbling franchise to begin with. And so things are definitely not going great on South Beach.
And that my question for you, can you scratch out and find a silver lining? Like, if a Marlins fan asked you, like, hey, what do I look forward to now? Like, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? I believe most have already become anti-Jeter, just listening to some of the sports talk radio outlets coming from Miami, and they have people calling in, and I don't think they have tunnel vision. They're just angry at Derek Jeter for what he's doing. But if a Marlins fan approached you and said, Brandon, what do I have to look forward to right now? Could you point at one or two options? Because you'd like to say Christian Yelich, but he might be traded. He might be next in line after Stanton, D. Gordon, and Marcelo Ozuna.
Yeah, I think there's little doubt that Yelich is the next one with one foot out the door, and you got Justin Bour, JT Realmuto. They've got a few nice players still left there. For me, what you would probably have to do, and it would sound like you're really being a homer, is point to the Astros and say, look, you strip it down to the studs and kind of deal with these 90 or 100 lost seasons for a few in a row. You bank up some draft picks, you build up the farm system, and you take another run at it. But is there any guarantee any of those prospects are going to be better than Yelich, Stanton, or Jose Fernandez? I mean, the fact of the matter is they really just frittered away a lot of talent. Again, through unfortunate circumstances, but also just shooting themselves in the foot. And so as much as you want to be like, well, yeah, they could follow the Astros plan, blow everything up, go down to like the $12 million payroll or whatever it is, and just lose, there's no guarantee that it's going to pan out, because, you know, the Astros also needed a guy like Jose Altuve to become a star. They needed it to nail that draft pick of Carlos Correa when everyone thought they were going to go in another direction. And even still, they've made a few mistakes along the way, but they've had a lot go right with their draft picks. And I don't know. As much as that looks like the path the Marlins would like to take, there's certainly no guarantees on that pathway.
Had I told you, Brandon Warren, 4 or 5 years ago, that in 2017, Derek Jeter would be widely framed in a negative light, and Alex Rodriguez would become beloved by many once again. If I told you that 4 or 5 years ago, that would be the result or the world we're living in 2017, what would you have said then?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I felt like the witch hunt for A-Rod was a little bit strong, but the Jeter thing is just unbelievable. I thought A-Rod was a guy who took the money when the money was offered and made some poor choices as far as, you know, steroids and on-field stuff, but ultimately he was a human man who made choices, though I think a lot of us would if we put his shoes and uniform on. With Jeter, though, he just had that golden boy reputation. The first hit on ESPN, no matter what he does, whether grounds out to third base or hits a home run, he just thought that was going to be a reputation that was beyond tarnished. And even now, he's become even less likable than Jeffrey Luria, the previous owner. Or maybe not less likable, but his descent has been more quick. I don't know. I mean, he can obviously turn it around, and he's got plenty of equity in the media market as far as people wanting him to do good things. But, boy, people have turned on him fast, which is pretty remarkable.
We always love having him on the program. Brandon Warren is our guest this afternoon of The Athletic. Find his work, theathletic.com/MN. All right, let's talk Twins. They've made a couple of moves. Let's start with Michael Pineda, 2-year deal. $2 million this year, $8 million next season. It seems like it was a move made looking ahead just a bit, correct? Because he's recovering from Tommy John and isn't even expected to pitch this season.
Yeah, that's probably true. It was a mid or I believe late July, Tommy John. He gave him 14 months, which is a little less aggressive. I know Mike Telfrey was less than a year, but Mike Telfrey is kind of strange. But if you want to be even just mostly safe, it maybe means September of this year. And, hopefully the Twins are playing for something, and who knows, maybe they'll have won the division by then and they can give Pineda a couple starts to see where he's at. But ultimately, this was an eye to 2019, and even how the deal is structured, you can see that. 2-year, $10 million deal, and it's $2 million this year, $8 million next year. The Cubs did, your Cubs did the same thing pretty much with Drew Smyly, $3 million this year, $7 million next year. And I think I prefer Pineda between those two just because Smiley's just had so many issues over the last few years. So when Pineda's right, he does pretty much everything you want a modern starter to do. The big, strong guy, good velocity, good secondary stuff. But the big issue he's had, he gets strikeouts, doesn't walk anybody, gets grounders. He gives up a lot of home runs. And so it's something where if you look at inside his numbers, too, he gives up home runs on all of his pitches. So it's not like he's going 3-0 on somebody and then coming over with a fat fastball. He throws cutters that get hit out of the park, sliders, changeups. And so with this new guy they've hired from Tampa Bay, from the Rays, Josh Kalk, is supposed to be like a pitching guru. I'm hoping that he can find something in Pineda that allows him to unlock this ace potential. So frankly, I think it's a really, really savvy move to not only hire Josh Kalk, of course, but to go get Pineda on a deal like this.
I was going to say with Pineda as well, he at one time, Brandon, was a real up-and-comer with lofty expectations inside that Yankees organization that he could be a future stud of that staff. Are the Twins hoping he can perhaps find just some of that form in 2019 with this signing?
Well, before that, it was Felix Hernandez, Taijuan Walker, and Michael Pineda were going to be like the next big three for the Seattle Mariners. And then they made that challenge trade for Jesus Montero. They flipped him to the Yankees. So I think he's only, going to be 29 in January. So it's not like he's completely finished developing either. If they can find something to unlock just one little tweak with him, I mean, you may have gotten an ace on the cheap, or at least a really good pitcher who you also have pretty much an entire year to evaluate and offer an extension. And keep in mind, too, after this year, Ervin Santana, Brian Dozier, Joe Mauer, you got all these guys off the books. The Twins drop about $40 million or so from their payroll after this year, and that's why you can start thinking about Yu Darvish. You can start thinking about some of these bigger contracts. So if Pineda's good, they would be happy to give him another deal, which is not a bad thing.
So the Twins get a starter. They added some bullpen help as well. Brandon Warren is our guest this afternoon of The Athletic. By the way, find his work, theathletic.com/MN. We always enjoy having him on the program. They get a starter in Pineda. They add some bullpen help, bringing in the bow and arrow shooter himself, Fernando Rodney. 1-year deal for a soon-to-be 41-year-old tells us, at least told me, I thought at the time, the Twins are also going to invest in the now. Is that fair to say? You don't sign Fernando Rodney, 41 years old, to a 1-year deal looking ahead to future seasons. That's a move
right.
Made to try to help you win right now.
And it has an identical option, too. So it's $4.5 million for this year, incentives up to $6 million, and then an identical team option for 2019 as well. But, yeah, basically he's got young guys' skills. He still throws hard. He's a two-pitch pitcher between a fastball and a changeup, but they're both really great pitches. He's 95 with the fastball on average, so he'll touch up 96 to 98. The command is a little bit spotty, but strikeouts, grounders, keeps the ball in the park. A lot of things you want your closer to do, but you're going to want to give him clean innings. So if you've got a jam in the eighth inning with runners on the corners and nobody out, you are probably more likely to go to Trevor Hildenberger or Taylor Rogers if it's a lefty at the plate. So they got somebody with closing experience. I believe Mike Berardino said he can't find any evidence of the Twins ever signing an outside reliever to a multi-year deal. That's old regime, that's current regime, or anything. So they're staying pretty close to the message there. But, yeah, let me tell you, if he was 35, I bet he gets a three-year deal. So I think it's a good, savvy move. And, you know, as much as maybe there's some risk with his command, he does everything else right that you want from a closer, and he can take some pressure off some of the younger guys who are kind of getting their feet wet, the John Curtises and those kind of guys as well.
I saw that stat floating around Twitter the other day, too, and I was amazed at it. I mean, that's incredible that they've never signed a bullpen arm like that to a multi-year deal ever. It's just, it's insane. You raved about Rodney, I know, or spoke his praises on The Athletic and on Twitter. What has you so smitten on Fernando Rodney?
I think it's just that he offers something that they don't have as far as other guys. They don't have a huge strikeout arm. I think Hildenberger will strike righties out, but, you know, with lefties, he's more of a weak contact pop-ups guy. So it's somebody who throws hard. You just, with bullpens, I think you like to get different looks, you know, a sidearm or a lefty, an over-the-top guy, a hard thrower, a soft thrower. The more different looks you can give an offense or another team to have to prepare for just sets you up better. He's, you know, obviously with 300 career saves, he's been in those late innings and has some experience, as much as maybe we don't think that matters a ton. I don't know. I think he brings an added wrinkle of help that they didn't have already. And anytime you can kind of stack up guys further into that bullpen, you know, push Tyler Duffy into the sixth inning, Hildenberger into the seventh or whoever, it just makes your bullpen that much better. Maybe Ryan Pressly breaks through finally and has a nice year. They've got some really interesting arms, and I think that's why Rodney fits for this team.
What do these moves signal, if anything, about what Derek Falvey and Thad Levine may be thinking about the direction of this franchise, but either right now or going forward?
They're ready to open the window, and I think they sense blood in the water with Cleveland. If you look at Kansas City, they're losing like five key free agents. If you go to Royals.com and look up at their depth charts, they're terrible. Who they have signed right now is awful. With Cleveland, they've already lost Brian Shaw, who signed with the Rockies. They're probably going to lose Carlos Santana, Jay Bruce. They don't know what they're going to get out of Michael Brantley. So the Twins have to sense blood in the water, and they need to open this window right now. And if they go out and sign Yu Darvish, which I feel better about now than I have at any other point, the Twins are putting Cleveland on notice and saying, look, we're not happy to host or play in the wild card game. We're coming for you, and we understand what we need to do to get to that level, and it might be to go toe-to-toe with you rotation-wise while having a young and up-and-coming offense. So, honestly, if they sign Yu Darvish, I'm content in giving this offseason an A+.
Do you believe they're putting a lot of eggs into their basket of hoping Yu Darvish or one of the available top-end starters? Darvish is the one that's had the most steam, it feels like, with the Twins when people are talking about it. Do you believe they're putting a lot of those eggs into that basket, hoping that he or maybe an Arrieta or someone of that caliber signs with them?
I do, and I think it's by definition just because of the separate tiers. It's kind of hard not to, you know, if you have a Darvish, the fallbacks other than Arrieta are, you know, another step down, and so you do have to put the full court press. You know, you read Mike Berardino's stories about Chris Jimenez telling Darvish that Minneapolis is a good place to play and finding out whether or not Darvish likes the community and how it'll be for a home for him and all that. So I think by definition you kind of have to put all your eggs in that basket to show how in you are on that player and how committed you are to that player. So I think they're doing a really great job, and I people will accuse me of being a mouthpiece for the team, and I can handle that. I don't care. I really like the moves. I think they're taking some risks that the previous regime wouldn't have, and I still believe they're going to hand out a contract bigger than they ever have in free agency, whether that means signing Cobb, Lynn, Darvish, or Arrieta. I think there's a fairly good chance of that.
Brandon Warren, we always love having him on the program. Find his work, theathletic.com/MN. You said something to the tune a couple minutes ago. If they get Darvish, you know, that'd be a nice cap or a nice bow on this offseason for the Twins. If I flip that around on you, Brandon, if they don't get a Yu Darvish, a Cobb, a Lynn, an Arrieta, or one of those names, would this offseason then maybe not be viewed as like a complete disappointment, but would it be a little deflating if they didn't get an arm like that?
Assuming everything stayed static, I'd probably have to be like a B-. I mean, Pineda's a nice piece. He's a good gamble, but he really doesn't move the needle forward this year. And I think that's, you know, I got comments on that piece I wrote for The Athletic about you know, are you serious? They went and got pitching. This guy can't even help them. You have to view it with the narrow focus that the winter meetings are like the beginning of the off season. You know, there's some moves beforehand, but a lot of the big chips haven't fallen yet. And so you give the Twins a sticker, a star, say, good start. Now where do you go from here? And that's where I think people are missing my point is, like, yeah, they're off to a really nice start for this off season, but you need to put the icing on the cake. Like, cake by itself is terrific. Without icing, though, it's just cake. So, you know, this is a B-minus cake that could be an A-plus with a little, you know, icing or frosting.
Who doesn't love a cake analogy? I love it.
Right.
I'm hungry now, man. All right, let's finish up with a couple of league-wide notes. Not a free agent, but name is swirling around the trade rumor mill. What uniform is Manny Machado wearing at the start of the 2018 season, if I had you peg one in right now?
Oh, my gosh. You're putting me on the spot, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm going to take the field. I'm going to say Baltimore. I don't know if anybody ponies up enough for him. And I think they hold him to the deadline and hope that somebody gets desperate. As much as I think Chicago is a weird fit, the White Sox, and I know Baltimore is paranoid that he'll then be flipped to the Yankees, which is ridiculous. If you get the value you want from Machado, you shouldn't care where he ends up, especially because he can sign wherever he wants as a free agent in a year anyway. Get the value. If you can get whatever you need from Chicago, call it good. I'm just not sure they're going to get that for a one-year guy, even if he is the unbelievable, insane $400 million talent that he is, which is pretty much indisputable. So I think I'm going to take Baltimore, but that is such a cop-out.
I know. That's all right. I know it was either Tim Kirchin, Buster Olney, someone on ESPN was talking last night or two nights ago, and Bryce Harper's name was brought up, and that the Washington Nationals wanted to open up a dialogue to see if he'll sign a long-term extension. And I can't – it was either Buster Olney or Tim Kirchin, and they said there's a 0.0% chance Bryce Harper signs an extension. Doesn't mean he won't stay with the Nationals, but that he will absolutely enter free agency next year. Do you see it going down the same way that there's no way that he'll sign an extension with the Nationals and he'll be a free agent at the end of next year?
Yeah, and I think you're looking at a $450 million deal, like something maybe – $30 million in 15 years? I mean, does that sound crazy? Yes. Does it sound possible? Yes. I don't know. I mean, $30 million in 15 years might not be that big of a deal. And he is only, what was he born, 1992, so he's 25, 26. I mean, A-Rod got 10 years and 250 back in 2000 or 2001. With inflation, with where the game's at financially, I don't think it's crazy to think $450 or $500 million. So, I still think it's 0.0%. I concur with that. But how many teams can offer that kind of money is kind of mind-blowing, because I think that's what some of those franchises are worth.
We'll wrap it up on this. Take Stanton out of it and take Shohei Ohtani out of it, and you may not even think they were, like, overly great moves, perhaps. I don't know, for either of those teams, even though most think they probably are. But what move did a team make or trade, free agent scoop up, so far that you looked at and you're like, man, I really like that move by that organization, whether it's Ozuna getting traded to the Cardinals and you like that for St. Louis, Ian Kinsler to the Angels? What one move out of the two big bubbles that burst with Stanton and Ohtani have you looked at and said, man, that's a really, really smart move by that franchise?
You know, I'm going to keep an eye on the move by the Cubs, and I'm kind of pandering to you here, of Tyler Chatwood, and I kind of wonder if they aren't thinking they can find the next Jake Arrieta, move on from the current one and find the next one. Chatwood was a pretty good prospect for the Angels a while back. Keith Law said it was because of his curveball. Now, with Colorado, the curveball is out of play because of the thin air. It doesn't break as much. If they can get him back to throwing a good curveball, he's got a good arm, he's younger than people think, I mean, maybe they got something there. You know, you said Ozuna and you said Kinsler. I pegged the Kinsler move about a month ago, and I'm going to pat myself on the back for that, but it just made too much sense. But surrounding Mike Trout with talent to potentially win the division and see where they go from there is obviously a brilliant move. And Ozuna's a superstar, on the cusp of superstardom. If he can repeat last year, he's a superstar. And, you know, the Cardinals gave up something for him. Sandy Alcantara's pretty good. But you give up your prospects for players like that every day of the week. It's like if the Twins wanted Chris Archer, give them what they want. If they wanted Marcus Stroman, give the Blue Jays what they want. So I would say, though, the Chatwood move is the one that intrigues me the most. I also want to see where Logan Morrison lands, because I'm a big fan of his new approach.
Find his work, theathletic.com/MN. Make sure to subscribe. Brandon, as always, it's been a pleasure.
You got it. Same to you.
All right, we'll wrap things up, put a bow on the show next.